You know him, you love him, number 57, Olin Krutz.
Man,
happy to be here.
Olin gives us football legitimacy, Bears legitimacy, offensive line legitimacy, and I'll go ahead and say it. It'll be the first time I say it. Center position legitimacy. You know what I mean? Like, my career is well known.
Yes.
It's well known, but Olin played at a higher level in more important situations than my 4 years with the Mighty Sequoias.
Yeah.
I think.
He actually has talked about how.
Well, a lot. I've heard this story.
But I'm giving it to you. I'm conceding now.
It reminds me of, like, at home, I'll start talking and my 13-year-old daughter, Abby, will be like, we know, Dad. You're the greatest center of all time. You did everything. You played for the Bears. And it's amazing, though. She'll say verbatim what I've said, which probably means I've said it too much.
No, not at all. But they listen. That's a good thing.
Well, and that's what home is supposed to do. I remember one night after a rock show with the band, right? I'm like making the bed for my mother-in-law who's sleeping over. And I say to my wife, you think Mick Jagger's making a bed right now? And she's like, I think Mick Jagger makes a little more and hires people to make a bed. I'm like, all right, good call.
It's actually an excellent point.
It really is.
It's great to have Olin here as we kick off the season. Games start tonight. We will carry Thursday Night Football. It's going to be awesome because the Cubs are off today. So we've got Thursday Night Football. There's also Friday Night Football. There'll be college football on Saturday, Sunday, and then the dessert. Then Monday night, it is Vikings at Bears. And we get to see what Ben Johnson is all about. Olin, let's go all the way back because we have a group of people here that may not have heard you when the hire happened. There's obviously the person in their car or at their desk that wants to talk Bears. When Ben Johnson was hired, what did you think it signified?
It signified that the hottest candidate wanted to come coach the Chicago Bears, which there was some worry about, right? There was some worry that he was not interested in the Chicago Bears because of their history with their franchise and the things they go through. And to be fair, we haven't won a lot around here lately, right? And people are worried about coming here. And a lot of coaches have come here and they've been geniuses and they've left idiots, right? The building has done that to a lot of guys. So people are worried about that, right? When you come here, and I had some insight into talking to some guys who knew him, and they were a little worried about that. And that was just early on in the process. And then all of a sudden, he came up, he took the job. Now, $13 million a year helps, right? I mean, the money helps to come here and try to change the path that we've been on with quarterbacks and offense and getting things going in the right direction. And I've said many times on these radio waves that the last time we won a playoff game, I was playing. And I'm old, right? I'm 401k is coming for me right around the corner. And, you know, my son just graduated college. So they got to start winning football games up there at Halas Hall. I'm always interested, Lawrence and Speaks, when people say to me, man, why do you sound like you doubt the Bears so much? And I just print up the 10-year history, the last 10 years of their records. And I say, well, why do you trust them so much, right? So to have a guy like him, who you guys know, he wasn't taking certain jobs. He was going through a very thorough process of checking on what was in the building, who he wanted to coach, and who he wanted to be, and where he thought he could win. And just him picking the Chicago Bears meant to me that what he saw, who knows what he saw, he liked. And that's positive.
I'm really glad that you brought it to that level right away, because that's a reminder of the realities. And you mentioned talking to people who knew him. And as that process went on, those people that knew him, and eventually we heard it from him, were way more impressed than they expected to be. Because like all these years that we've been talking Bears, when you were playing, before you were playing, here on the score for 30 plus years, and in the last 5 or 10, go higher. What about the front office? Go higher. What about ownership? They don't want a strong coach, all that. It seems like Kevin Warren convinced ownership to get the man as the coach and let him be the face of it. And that's a big deal, isn't it?
Huge, huge. And it's well said by you. And Kevin Warren, Ryan Poles, this is the new leadership at Halas Hall, right? And whatever Ben Johnson saw from them, he liked in the direction they were moving in. And they re-signed Ryan Poles to a contract to marry him to Ben Johnson. And some of that is like, wow, man, you don't got to do much to get a new contract at Halas Hall. It's your first reaction, right? It's your first, like, but you go out and you get, you know, Caleb Williams, who people say is a generational quarterback. He's the number one pick. You signed the hottest coaching candidate in the NFL. Everybody wanted Ben Johnson, right? And when you watch him schematically on film, for a guy like me, watch him call plays, watch him do matchups, watch him attack people, you know what? He's really, really good at getting his offense to do the things it has to do to score points and attack defenses. He's really good at that.
Have you seen some stuff in camp that lets you know, staying in the big picture, that it's Ben's show? That it's Ben, you know, kind of in charge of things, whether that's personnel or the way things are run, that he's as empowered as a coach needs to be?
Well, first of all, a new coach is always empowered in the building, right? They have to start to transition to what he believes and the kind of players that he wants, right? And who he wants to coach and who he wants in the building to move in the direction that he wants to go in. So obviously, early on, it is Ben Johnson's show. Now, him and Ryan Poles have to work together. Kevin Warren's a part of it. As you guys know, buildings win championships, right? Like, everyone's always turning over the same spots, right? The head coach, the players. Eventually, the building there has to win championships, and it starts and hopefully grows from Ben Johnson's leadership.
You gave us a bar when you talked about the farther away you are from the football, the farther away you are from football. Mm-hmm. And it's seared into our minds, and it's changed the way that we think.
The farther you get away from the football, the farther you get away from football.
Mm-hmm. All he did was take out a the. Well, he just took out an article.
It's pretty great.
That's a Washington education right there.
So I think about that a lot when, and Olin has opened up my mind to think more about the offensive line when it comes to football, which is great because we should. That's where the game's won and lost. Mm-hmm. So now you have a lot of money being paid guard to guard, which is great. They needed to upgrade those spots. Mm-hmm. We all like Darnell Wright. Solid. Mm-hmm. They're walking in the left tackle and walking to the season with the left tackle position just being figured out yesterday. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about what they did at that position? And what does it mean that you then drafted someone in what, the 54th pick or whatever Ozzie Tripillo was, to be a swing tackle? That's a strange allocation of assets that you got going on there.
Yeah, and it started with Ryan Poles and the general manager, Ian Cunningham, the assistant general manager, right? And their scouting department, as you guys have known, anybody who listens to me on the airwaves, and I've been speaking at homes here, I have a lot of questions. And the way they designed the O-line and who they decided to pick. And they did throw a lot of money. Dahlman, you know, they gave the number one center in free agency, Dahlman, some money. They signed Joe. They trade for Joe Tooney. They signed Jonah Jackson, right? They drafted Darnell Wright. There is a lot of assets there in the offensive line, right? And then on the other side, Javon Dexter, Grady Jackson, Billings, Montez Sweat. But so it's just there's a lot of guys to draft, right? There was Ursary out of Minnesota there the year before. They took Romo Dunze instead of Olu Fashanu. I would have took, obviously, I'm an O-liner. I would have took one, the left tackle. Right, I always want to build my left tackle. If you watch the Eagles, if you watch them play, if you see the way they design their team, it's like they're waiting for a street fight to break out, and they just ask themselves, will we win the street fight? And they would, right? And they take O-linemen and D-linemen year after year, and they stack those positions because you're going to need those guys late in the year to win. And you know, Braxton Jones is a question mark. I will say this. If you have the number one pick in the draft, if you have a head coach making $13 million, if the inside of your offensive line is making all that money, if you drafted a receiver in the first round, if you gave DJ more money, if you drafted Luther Burden, if you drafted Coastin Loveland, a tight end, and drafted Cole Kmet in the second round, if it doesn't work, it's not Braxton Jones' fault. Those guys are not making them better. Let me give you an example. On Twitter, everybody talked about the one play where Braxton Jones let the linebacker blitz. He didn't slide it and pick him up. That is his guy. It's called a dual protection. He has two guys. He takes the most dangerous of the two guys. So it's a five-man to slide away from him. First of all, I wouldn't slide away from Braxton Jones with all the money. I'd slide to him. First, here's what you can do. And I saw even the old Bear quarterback Chase Daniels posted, if you want to go on Twitter, he posted and talked about how it should have been a touchdown, but Braxton didn't do his job. The great quarterbacks walk up and say, Braxton, that guy's coming. Make sure your eyes are on him. Because why? I'm the number one pick in the draft. I have to make the guy making $500,000 a year better. I have to make him better. I know that. If I see that he has the hardest job on the offense at that moment, it is in my job to make him a better football player. I have to walk up and say, look, we're signing the line. You have those two guys. It looks to me like he's coming. Take him first. I'll negotiate in the end.
Can't imagine Caleb being ready to do that. just
I can't.
Yet.
I can't. He's in second year.
You think so?
Yeah, he's got Ben Johnson, right? He's got all these. He's got all these assets there.
Okay, well, let's
all these guys. He finally got Pete. Someone, from what I heard, someone had to teach him how to watch film. Right, that's what I heard last year. So I don't know. Like I just, as from a football guy, there's still some things I hear. I get confused. Right. I just when I'm watching, okay, yes, that is Braxton's job. If I'm the center in that position, I lean over. I say, Braxton, make sure you're watching that guy. Right, like that guy looks like he's coming to me. And he needs a silent count as Kansas City Chiefs. It's a tough game.
Well, that's interesting. So Olin says he ought to be ready to do that. Mm-hmm. That leads well into this little bit of tape that we wanted to play for you. This is from Drew Dahlman, the news center, when asked earlier in the week about his relationship with Caleb, mm-hmm. who's going to be helping who, how they're going to work together on identifying certain things maybe in the pass rush. Here's a little Q&A with Drew Dahlman.
Drew, since you got here, there's been kind of talk of how you could take some things off Caleb's plate to help him play faster. What are some of those things that you think you've been able to kind of alleviate that's going to allow him to be at an optimal level?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I guess without getting into any kind of scheme specifics or anything like that, we've done a really good job of communicating with each other and letting each other know like what's helpful, what's not helpful, what kind of things he really likes to hear from me and what things we need to hear from him. And so that's always been really good, kind of learning the flow of information at the line of scrimmage. And then just the offense as a whole runs really well when all of us are communicating. And so that's been a focus, is like the O-line relaying everything we need to know, and then the quarterback relaying back and all that. So I feel like that's been really improving and it's been good.
So he doesn't want to give it up. And there's another part of it where he's like, I don't want to talk about that because it's too much scheme. So I kind of like that he's protecting his quarterback and protecting the relationship. But what do you hear when you hear a guy not want to give it up and saying it's the whole offensive line's job, that kind of thing?
Yeah, he's actually saying what we just talked about, right? He's saying, what do we need from you there? I'm in silent cadence. I cannot help the left tackle, right? If the quarterback's inside, when the offensive line is like – people have to understand, when you're on the road and it's silent count, a lot of the stuff, the communication goes out the window. Hmm. The quarterback is basically in charge. He's the only guy who can change protections, see things, let everyone know what might be coming, what might not be coming. I was just watching, Ben Johnson and the Lions averaged 31 points, right, against the Vikings last year. So watching how did they get that done? Jared Goff's doing a lot of that. He's doing a lot of redirection. He's taking a lot of hits, getting the ball out. He's doing a nice job negotiating Flores, who – he guy's insane with the stuff he brings. But what you hear there is, what do we need from Caleb? That may be something we need, right? Like just – and Caleb, that's what preseason is for. You learn that. Hmm. In that moment, hey man, remember, five-man protection. By five-man protection, I mean everyone else is out in routes. There's only five guys blocking, right? The offensive line is the only guys who have blocking responsibilities. So the running back is not going to block the linebacker. So now the backside tackle mostly – in a bubble that don't go too far, but he has two guys. You know that as a quarterback. If you think that linebacker's coming, walk up and tell him. Your number one job is to protect yourself. That's your number one job. You can blame the fifth round pick tackle if you want, right? You can do that. That's up to people. But I always live by this: who much is given, much is expected, right? And just like in any business, right? Like. In Odyssey, Mitch Rosen probably makes a good amount of money.
He does.
Yeah, a lot is expected.
How much, Mitch? This is a good time to announce it.
Playing the hits.
a lot is expected. And he's got to do a lot, right? He's got to get up early in the morning, get all the shows organized, and make sure everyone's doing what they got to do. Same thing in a football building, right? Like that's what they're talking about. That's what Dahlman is talking about. What do we need from him? And Caleb's telling Dahlman, this is what I need from you, right? But now you got here's another thing that you can throw in there. Joe Tooney's not playing that game. Joe may tell him. Right now you got another guy there who much is given, much is expected. Right? And he knows blitz is coming. He knows his tackle's got a dual responsibility. He may tell him. See, a lot of guys on that field now who are paid a lot and have a lot to do, and you got a coach who is a lot is expected of.
Whenever I hear people talk about Caleb, and I mentioned the idea of, man, I would love it if he could play like Jared Goff, people get mad at me, Olin. They're like, well, he's better. And I was like, well, hold on. Like, Jared Goff was also one of one. Like, he was the number one pick overall as well. And you look at his production, especially with Ben Johnson, even though I think Caleb might be a little bit more athletically gifted, I know that Jared Goff can run an offense and kind of do what he's asked to do. Mm-hmm. how long should it take for a guy like Caleb, who is in his college career, going all the way back to high school, was probably the best player on the field. Then in college, he had to do a lot of hero stuff because he was the best player on his team. Mm-hmm. How hard is it to get someone who succeeded doing it that way mm-hmm. to be like, hey, when you get to the top of the drop, ball needs to come out? Right. How difficult is that to get a quarterback to understand?
He's got great arm talent, right? And he is an amazing athlete. And the way he can throw the ball around the field is – he's second to none. I mean, the thing is amazing what he does. How hard is it to get someone to run an NFL offense, see everything they need to see, make everyone around them better, give the tips, get everything going? Obviously, we've all seen over the years, it's extraordinarily hard, right? It's extraordinarily hard to do. Even in the NFL right now, how many guys would you say can do it? Right? Like, it's like, are you
nine?
Yeah.
14?
At the most. At the most,
I was
going
to say six.
Yeah, at the most.
I'll go back to nine.
Just really, really tough. Being a quarterback in the NFL is a really hard job, right? So, but can he do it? How long should we expect the way? Look, I'm going to watch him this year with Ben Johnson as his coach. We all heard it was all Eberflus' fault last year, from what I understand. That's all I hear about. So I'm always interested when there's a million millionaires in the building, they all point to one guy.
He was pretty bad, though.
Right? That's what you hear. Right? You weren't in the building, right? That's what we hear from
people in the building.
People in the building. The people who are all still kept the their building. Job by throwing him nicely under the bus, right? So it's fine. It's just always fascinating to me when it's like all 30 millionaires over here, and everybody's like, it was his fault.
You're saying we bought it?
Yeah,
we
listen, bought a little too much? I couldn't do my job because of him. I just don't like, Lawrence, I'm going to do my job.
Now we're back to Mitch.
No matter what, right? So it's going to be interesting as we go here with Ben Johnson and Kayla Williams and Declan Doyle and all the guys they have in that building to help him develop, help him process information, have him surrounded him with the right people to help him learn how to be a pro. I go through, when I got here, my idea of football was just to hit anybody I could hit. Just attack everybody all day long, and just eventually that would win me a job. I like to say violence is a skill, right? And I think that people who are violent, they naturally violent. You can see it on film, and eventually that pops to a coach, right? Like, they want to see that violence. But I was competing with a very good center, Casey Wigman, and I think people a long time ago might have remembered. He played a long time in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And Casey would not make a mistake. He wouldn't. He wouldn't mentally make a mistake. Every time I stood up to leave the room, he was studying his book. So I sat my ass down and studied my book. But to beat him out, I had to learn how to not make mistakes, make the right calls, do the right things on a football field. And I heard Mark Sanchez the other day said that when he first got in the league, Rich Gannon was watching film with him and said, what do you see on this film? And Mark was like, the defense. And he started going through everything you're supposed to be watching on the film. Right? So people blame Coach Eberflus and Waldron for the whole film story. I blame the plan. Where is the veteran who has to help him learn how to watch film?
Well, that's it. You talk about Sanchez. That's what Lawrence was calling for the whole season and the offseason. And now here's Case Keenum. So
right.
Somebody did teach Mark Sanchez how to watch film.
That's what
film.
I'm saying. So it's a whole group of people saying, okay, look, this is how you play quarterback, right? We don't snap the ball late on a jet sweep in the preseason, right? We have to learn how to snap that ball from under center. It's a tough thing to learn when you didn't do a lot of it like you're talking about. So I'm waiting to like midseason this year and see if he's controlling the line of scrimmage, doing the things he's got to do. If you watch just from – I mean, I think we'll see very similar game plans this week with Minnesota and the Bears, with J.J. McCarthy and Caleb Williams.
Hmm.
And we'll see outside zone, and we see boots, and we'll see layered concepts, and we'll see them tackling one side of the field, and both teams trying to protect their quarterback and give them easy reads.
All right, we got more. That's an education. Like, that last 15 minutes was just an absolute education from Olin Krutz. We got more.
Chat GPT.
Just type in what you need. And Olin's got more. The
most Olin. Of the podcasts I listen to, I swear they're just Chat GPT.
You might be right.
You know what I mean? Like, they're just giving you stats. Like I was listening to a podcast the other day. I'm not going to say which one because I don't.
Ahead. I'll go ahead, man.
No, I won't. I won't do it.
All right. It was take.
I was doing my research, but I was like, gosh, like they could just get ChatGPT to do what this guy is doing, right? Just numbers and anyway.
So look, we're going to ask Olin some more questions because he knows what he's talking about after a quick timeout.
I want to know how his life is changing with the return of these island games tonight. And we're here kind of celebrating the league as a whole as well.
It's pretty wild. We are at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Studio. We are brought to you by PNC Bank and your local Ford dealers. We have a great crowd here that's just hanging on every word.